Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a joint edition of Sportsology Radio and the FDH Lounge, specifically FDH Lounge mini episode number 550. This is FDH Lounge managing partner Rick Morris. I have with me Sportsology proprietor and FDH Lounge dignitary Russ Cohen to continue a little tradition that's been ongoing here, dating back to FDH Lounge mini episode number 250. At that time, Russ had a book that was coming out, and we wanted to use that slot to be able to promote the book, so we did so and left it open that just on the off chance, if there was another book coming out around the time that mini episode 350 came up, we would do the same thing. And it typically takes about 10 months, give or take, for 100 mini episodes to go here in the FDH Lounge. Suffice to say, 250, 350, 450, and now 550. Each of these ones being used to talk about a new book. In this case, this is a brand new book that Russ has out with his usual co-author, Adam Rader, and this is called Numbers Don't Lie, The Biggest Numbers in Mets History. I'm to talk about that here, of course, Russ Cohen himself. So, Russ, how's it going? And you got to be very geeked about the new book coming out.
I am. I'm excited, and yeah, I would never have guessed that this would keep on going, and to be honest, there's another book coming out next year, so I don't know if it'll still stay in step with this, but we'll see.
Right, and this time, sort of in step, relatively speaking, we haven't really done this before as far as putting up one of these things out of sequence, but because we're at 5:52.
Which is my fault.
But no, it's fine. We're trying to work this in for your schedule to try to accommodate on that. The fact is, of course, the book was done, the work on it anyways, a couple of days ago when 5:51 and 5:52 went up, so it is not a matter of stretching a deadline here to be able to accommodate that. The work on the book is done. Has been done. What's the latest on the release date?
So far, it's June 1st. We'll see if it doesn't pop up a little sooner. Sometimes it does. It's tight with the amount of books that Triumph does, and when we got everything in, and when things are finalized, and so we'll see. But I'll say June 1st. But I would say if you pre-order on Amazon, probably a few days before that.
Yeah, I was just about to get to that point. I know it's available for a pre-order on Amazon. Is that generally the most efficient way for everybody to go about this?
Yeah, that's the most efficient way. And certainly, it'll be everywhere, Barnes & Noble's. It'll be even at the National Baseball Hall of Fame. But what I noticed from previous book releases and for work we've done with Triumph is that, if you get that Amazon pre-order, they get filled almost, on a first-come basis, so they hold a lot of gravitas, as they say.
Okay. Well, in the Amazon blurb, specifically, a couple of the things referenced for this Numbers Don't Lie book, six, the number of gold gloves Keith Hernandez earned in his career, 480, the distance in feet, Tommy Agee's home run traveled on April 10th, 1969, 696, the number of at-bats Jose Reyes had in 2005 to set a franchise record. So as far as the process of choosing what numbers were going to be included in this book, what was the process that you and Adam went through for selection?
Well, we got together and we met somewhere at some hotel in New York City, and we sat in the lobby and we just started hashing it out and just started, he had a tablet, I had a tablet, and we started looking at things, and we came up with the larger list of what might be interesting, and then, started to narrow it down over time. The of the ones you mentioned, the Keith Hernandez one's pretty cool because we, as Met fans, got to see him come over so almost as a disgraced player from the Cardinals because of the the drug trials and the way St. Louis sort of unceremoniously dumped him and traded him to the Mets. And so that was fun to see him just in action. I don't know if there's ever been a better clutch hitter for the Mets. There definitely has not been a better fielding first baseman, and that includes Rico Bronya, who I thought was great. It's just that Keith Hernandez could make that one play where he could charge in on a bunt and sniff it out, and if there were two men on, he'd get the lead runner, and he'd get the guy at third, or he'd get the guy at second, and just something that's not necessarily a lost art, but you don't see it that much in today's game. And as far as the Reyes thing, that's a lot of at-bats, if you think about it. I mean, it's just... Now, he didn't walk much and still doesn't walk much as a player, but still, that's just, you know, an eye-popping amount. And then, and there's a lot of other numbers that are in this book, and so it's fun. Baseball is about numbers, and this book has a lot of nice graphs and color charts, and so that's something that's maybe a little different for readers.
Well, I know that if Keith Hernandez were to ever show up in the Indians equivalent of one of these books as a lifelong Indians fan, I would say that his number would be one. Number of disgraceful money-thieving contracts that he signed to steal and bleed money away from an organization while faking a back injury and going out dancing. So Keith Hernandez could show up on lists for a couple of different teams, I guess such as the plight of the modern era, with these guys and the way that some of them get around. But as far as the guys on the Mets all-time roster, how did you guys stack this vis-a-vis? Obviously, you had to get guys in from the 1969 Miracle Mets era. You obviously wanted to get some guys in from the 86 era. How did you kind of try to level this out throughout history?
You know, we didn't really make an effort to level it. We really let this become sort of story and number driven. And so... You know, and there's guys from the early 60s, and there's two, certainly, you know, Casey Stengel's in there, and even Steve Chilcott, who was picked ahead of Reggie Jackson by the Mets. So, you know, which is always a fun thing to mention and kind of hurts when you mention it. But so we didn't really try to say, well, we have to sort of balance two of these and three of those. We didn't do that. And, you know, in a Mets book, and the fact that, you know, I grew up a huge Tom Seaver fan, there's a large contingent of Tom Seaver mentions and a couple different, he's got a couple different numbers in here, and he probably could have had a million if it were up to me, but it's always daunting if I write about Tom Seaver, so I sort of even pulled back a little bit of that, and then Adam went full bore Tom Seaver, which was great to see. And so people will really like the mentions of him. And you know, just to give you an example, the day that he, in 1970, he struck out 19 in a row and 10 overall. Let's start again. 10 in a row, 19 overall. Okay, so that's what he did. And I never watched that game for whatever reason. I was only 7, and maybe it was on a school night, April 22nd, sounds like it was, right? And... Mm-hmm. I always heard about it, and years later, I got a cassette tape, and I got to listen to that game. And you want to hear a crazy crowd, and Shea Stadium, when you used to be able to pound your feet, you could make the stadium rock, and it was just rocking. And you know, for those last 10 batters, which is still a major league record, it was unbelievable. And if you think about that for a minute, like, it doesn't sound like it's that hard of an accomplishment to strike out 10 in a row. But then when you start thinking about it, well, can't walk, can't reach an error, can't even, you know, hit a ball, even put it in play. And so with all the great pitchers, and I'm telling you, over the years, a couple of guys have gotten close, guys have gotten to 8 in a row, and then they just can't do it. And so this record is held since 1970. That's a long time. And the good people at Triumph, they, you know, they like to break down the numbers and stuff. And so, like, in this game, as an example, Seaver's 136 pitches, had 81 fastballs, 34 sliders, 19 curveballs, and 2 changeups. That's kind of cool.
That is, and that goes to show you, too, I imagine, as you're putting in statistics about especially some of the pitching feats of years gone by, that really probably has to underscore the changed era of today with the pitch counts that are in there, and the fact that, again, when you're referencing number of pitches for some of the starts previously, that almost sounds kind of medieval as far as the times that we're talking about here and how they used to run pitchers out there versus today.
Yeah, it does sound medieval, but, you know, you always learn something, or at least I always learn something when you go to the Baseball Hall of Fame. And so over the years, we've become accustomed to sort of like almost talk badly about Cy Young, right? Like, oh, well, look, he pitched in those days. Yeah, I know he's got like 515 wins, whatever it is, and it'll never happen. You know, baseball was different then. It was dead ball era, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the one thing that really hasn't changed is the human arm. And so you kind of wonder, well, Cy Young still was pitching from the same pitcher mound, right? I believe it was always 60 feet, 6 inches. And whether he was throwing a heavier ball, a lighter ball, a dead ball, a smaller one, a bigger one, his arm still had to go through the motions. And 7,356 innings later, he managed to have an amazing career. And so, and he pitched until he was 44, 22 years. So if you think about it, there's something to that where you say, why can't we go back to that? I don't know. And it's just so you know, now that I looked it up, it's 511 wins. But, you know, I was close. But the point is, we sort of belittle that, yet we really shouldn't. We almost should go back and look and see how these guys could do it. You know, Seaver never had an arm injury. He had a hip injury once and a knee injury, which sidelined him for the 86 World Series, which oddly enough, he was a member of the Red Sox. You know, so there's always those kinds of things, but he didn't have an arm injury. And so how is that possible with all the innings he pitched? So, yeah, it's a weird thing. And we have a million different, you know, everybody has a million different ideas on that, and we'll probably never get an answer. So I'm just moving on.
That seems hard to believe, some of the things about Cy Young and a number of victories. And I would say also, too, of all the unbelievable pieces of trivia about him, a good friend of mine is from the same small town in northeastern Ohio that he was from, I believe Newcomers Town. He and Woody Hayes. What are the odds that Cy Young and Woody Hayes are both from the same tiny town? It seems to defy estimation. Yeah. We're talking about a speck on the map. It's truly, yes. Truly unbelievable to yield two giants of American sports like that. But in the course
although,
of going
wait
through,
a minute. I think I can. Mm-hmm. Although I think I could do that again because besides Joe Namath being from Beaver Falls, wasn't Dan Marino from there too?
I think might have been. Yeah, but I believe though I think Newcomers Town might even be smaller. I'm not sure, but it's it's always weird whenever you get these ones running neck and neck like that as far as small towns and yielding guys like this. So in the course of putting together this book, again, there were some things, as you alluded to, finding out about the likes of Cy Young. But what are some pieces of research that came up in the course of the book that were the most surprising to you?
Pieces of research, I would say...
Anything that you learned, yeah.
Yeah, I would, you know, as a kid... I would marvel at Felix Mian. I don't know if you remember him, but, you know, the Mets acquired him, and he was a guy who really choked up on the bat. Really, nobody has ever choked up on the bat like that ever really since then. And nobody chokes up now, right? I mean, that's something like even talking about that is medieval. And I remembered one year he was the hardest guy to strike out in baseball, and I was about 10 years old. And so that always sort of stuck with me. And so one of the chapters is the year Felix Mian struck out only 14 times. I mean,
yeah.
Let's think about that for a minute in today's era.
You figure, though, in a sense, you're sacrificing, obviously, power. I mean, you know, methinks the guy wasn't hitting too many White Tower home runs the opposite way.
No.
But by the same token, it does make sense in a certain kind of way in terms of bat control and everything like that. As far as plopping it in there, it does make a rough amount of sense just on paper.
Yeah, and so, you know, we dug into it, and you could see we go by years at, you know, how many at-bats per strikeout, and it's kind of interesting how long he could go without a strikeout. Mm-hmm. And where today there's just not even a player other than, you know, Pujols doesn't strike out that much. There's a few, but most of the time you would never see anything like that. So that's kind of fun. I did get a take. Howie Carpen and I wrote that book, Baseball's Best Rookies, and he actually is the Mets' official scorer. And while he was not the official scorer for the game that Robin Ventura had the grand slam single, he actually was there and gave me a nice accounting of how he was explaining that to some of the media, like how to score that, you know, and how to explain it. Because that's a moment in Met history that everybody remembers. And I would have to think even a lot of non-Met fans would remember that moment.
Yeah, you would think so. It's pretty memorable. And the Mets, just like just about all the teams in Major League Baseball, have some real signature moments in their history that everybody can kind of latch onto, not just the fan base. Of course, it will be Mets fans most of all that are interested in how this book plays out in getting their hands on a copy. Numbers Don't Lie, the biggest numbers in Mets history. Anything we haven't really covered yet with the book that you want to get out there?
Yeah, I would say we even go so far as to talk about the apples, you know. I mean, the Mets home run apple, that's something where that's a staple. And I have a friend that came over from Finland. Well, actually, he's Finnish. They came over from Sweden, and actually he and his family wanted to see a Met game. He decided he was a Met fan, and I was, you know, sort of bringing him aboard. And then he said, well, you have to bring me, my family and I, to a Met game. And so I did that. And I took a picture of them by the apple. It turns out in the book there's a different picture of a family by the apple, but it just shows you that it's something that all Met fans want to do, even if they come from overseas. And so we actually, and I'm not going to give away the weight, but we actually talk about the weight of the apple and what that equates to with other things. You know, what else would equal that weight? So we had some fun with that. That was Adam Rader's brainchild, and I love it because it's just, it's one of those goofy things. The, you know, the Tommy Agee homer is a fun one because if people check out my Instagram at Sportsology or even my Facebook, Russ Cohen, they'll see that I did have a quest once to get my picture taken up there where the Tommy Agee homer was. And the way Shea Stadium, I don't know if you've ever been there, but the way Shea Stadium was set up, it was escalators that almost never worked. So you had to go up these ramps and going up and up and up. And it just took forever. Like, you know, you could feel the burn in your legs by the time you got up.
Yeah, sounds like Cleveland Browns Stadium.
Yes. And so by the time I got up near where the homer was, you know, we could feel the burn. So I, of course, really had to mention that. And actually what happened to the cement block that had the marker, it's kind of interesting too. So we had that in there. So things like that are fun. We do mention Mets managers, most wins as Met managers. Now, I'm not going to spoil it and tell you who's where, but, I mean, it's fun to mention, you know, Bobby Valentine, Gil Hodges, Terry Collins, Yogi Berra, you know, Davey Johnson, of course. So it's just, it's fun to put those things in there. Roberto Clemente, John Matlack, you know, they're tied in time because Clemente got his 3,000th hit against Matlack in his last major league game. And that had a big impact on me. I was, again, 10 years old? Was I 10? I think that was 73, right? 72, so I was 9 years old when that happened. And it really, it left a lasting impression with me. He was already becoming one of my favorite ball players, and then I had to deal with the fact that he passed away so heroically. And I remember bothering my father all winter that we needed to go to the Baseball Hall of Fame so I could see this statue. They had a wax statue of him that they put up and actually put his uniform on it. And I was like, I have to go see this. And my dad complied. It was the first time I ever went to, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame, and he brought us there, and we got to see that. And that really, that was tremendous for me. Even though he would routinely kill the Mets, I just had a lot of respect for the player.
That's great that the Hall of Fame did that. I was not aware of that. The Clemente thing, I don't really have memories of him playing. It was a little bit before my consciousness. But, yeah, I've been a big fan of his subsequently. as well, both as a player and for his humanitarian work that unfortunately he paid the ultimate price for. But yeah, it's that is an interesting thing, and that his connection with Matlack and them being forever intertwined, those are, of course, the kind of details, obviously, people are going to pick up. Numbers don't lie, the biggest numbers in Mets history, and you said probably still June 1st for a release date, Amazon.com, but potentially
yep.
before then, yes?
Yeah, potentially a little before that.
Okay. All right, people can look forward to that, and definitely I will look forward to checking this out as per always. And based on the schedule of events here, when FDH Lounge Mini Episode 650 comes up, we'll see how neatly that coincides with the timeline of the next book. It's unbelievable this has now happened four times in a row. I mean, the first one, not so much. It's maybe not an incredible coincidence that it happens to line up with a certain one, but everyone since then, 350, 450, 550, makes me think that 650 is definitely realistic.
Yeah, it all depends on when the book gets released. It's a book on the Philadelphia Flyers, and so, you know, when all this goes on, it's the publishers that have to actually stick to the schedule, too.
Right. It, in terms of that book, how much work's done on it thus far?
I would say 25%.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll be worth monitoring as time goes by. And based on a reasonable guesstimate as far as how long it's taken to get 100 mini episodes of the show in, give or take February 2016. So we'll see if the Flyers book is out, or at least you know, in the can and ready to be discussed, essentially, as this one is. This one's not out yet, but of course available for pre-order. Everyone can go
yep.
get that at Amazon, and it'll be interesting, yeah, in terms of the hockey and baseball rotations. But we'll be back to hockey next time.
Yeah, you know, so we keep going, or I keep going back and forth with baseball and hockey, and it's kind of a good thing, because since the seasons only coincide for a short time, generally it gives me a little extra time with some of the craziness when it calms down, so it's always a good time to work.
Right, right. Very little overlap, at least in terms of
yep.
the regular season for both leagues. That's almost non-existent. But
yep.
that'll be worth checking out the progress of the Flyers book as it goes along. And again, this one just about ready to be in people's hands, but of course can be pre-ordered right now at Amazon. Numbers don't lie, the biggest numbers in Mets history. Russ Cullen along with Adam Rader putting it together. So, Russ, thanks very much. Good conversation, getting to learn about the book here, and hopefully this conversation will be of use to anybody who has interest in the subject matter.
Appreciate it, Rick. It's almost like you're my pre-advanced publicist at this point, and I like that.
Yeah, well, that's an area of specialty here, so we do what we can. But, very interesting to get into the subject matter with you, Russ. Very good show discussion here. And, again, appreciate all of you out there for checking us out, Sportsology Radio and FDH Lounge mini episode number 550.